Hey everybody, welcome to the Mental Toughness and Body Show. My name is Rob Evans and I'm your transformation coach and health strategist. So last night I was watching a movie, which you may or may not have seen it. It's called Goal. You know, it's an old one. I don't know, it came out in 2004 or something. Maybe it's older than that. And then there's Goal 2, and then they just lost the plot and produced Goal 3. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense to the rest of the story. But anyway, some trilogies are good and some aren't. So as I'm watching the movie, I've said it many times before, I thought, oh, I'll just put it on in the background. It got me then thinking about, you know, the guy's journey from, the, you know, a kid through playing local club, and then the opportunity came up to go to the big leagues. And for a moment, it just got me thinking about my own personal journey. So I'm going to share it here today. And I've never spoken about this before in like its entirety and how I'm going to explain it to you today. It's got absolutely nothing to do with what I do now, but it's the principles. And so I used to play the bagpipes, right? And some of you may know that. If you've been following me for a while, you'll know that. Now, I didn't ever want to learn the bagpipes, but when I was 11, I come from a place called Bendigo here in central Victoria. And so it's about 2.5 hours from where I live now. And we have every year, and they still do it now, they have a big Easter carnival with, they have like this, because it's an old gold mining town, so there's a big Chinese population there. So they have the Chinese dragons come out and a huge spectacular display, and there's firecrackers and a big procession and all that kind of stuff. And every year we would go and there would be pipe bands. So the Bendigo had three pipe bands at the time. And I remember we were there listening, and then, like, I was 11, my brother was like 13, and we were walking away from the procession because it had finished and stuff, and Mum said, on Monday or next week, whatever, you're going along to learn the bagpipes. And I'm like, well, I don't want to learn the bagpipes, I want to learn the drums. And my brother was allowed to learn the drums, and I said, well, you're too small to be able to even lift the drums. At 11, I was like tiny. I said, but that's not fair. Why does he get to do that? And blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I went along for the first night and I just loved it. Like, I just loved it. It was this concept of, you know, you could move your fingers and blow down this plastic stick and your sounds would come out. And then if you could structure the notes in a certain way, then you could play a song, or we call them tunes. And so I got the, just like learning the piano, you start with scales. And so they gave me the, I don't know, let's just say it was the first two scales. And then I went home, I practiced and practiced and practiced. I was like, I'm going to learn these to memory so next week I can play them perfectly so that I can get that next thing. I was hungry. I wanted to get that next lot of scales. And I did that and I got further and further and further. And then I started to learn to play my first piece of music. And so you would learn it in the first two lines of the music, if you like. And I was determined that by the end of next week, I would remember that. I'd be able to play it flawlessly. And then I was learning with another kid that was the same age, and I started to, I made it competitive, I guess, in myself with him. And he didn't know about it, but I wanted to be better than him by the next week. I wanted to be able to learn it. And he wasn't doing the practice and he was dropping behind, and I was just going further and further ahead. And so then we got to the point where I'd been in that band, which was just happened to be the worst band in Bendigo, because you don't know at the time. And I was being taught the wrong things. And it really wasn't great, but I only know that with hindsight. And anyway, we get to a point where Dad was working with a guy that knew somebody in that was a better quality tutor, if you like. And for, I can't even remember, Mum and Dad just made this decision that they would reach out to this guy, Fred was his name, and to ask him if he'd take me on as a pupil. And anyway, Fred was a little bit outspoken. He'd seen me play in the band, and of course they'd set me up the wrong way. The Because I was so small, they'd given me like a normal size set of bagpipes, and the mouthpiece was too long, and I had to, you know, tilt my head, and I wasn't holding it properly, and they hadn't modified it properly for me. And he was quite outspoken, and people in the band had heard what he'd said. And anyway, Dad approached him, and Fred, you know, got stuck into Dad, I think, a bit about saying, well, you know, he's been taught the wrong things, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, to cut up through all that stuff, there's a whole bunch of things that went around it. I started learning from Fred. So Fred was my first coach. And so I'm about 11, maybe 12 at this stage. I'm probably still 11, actually. And so he started to teach me. Now, I was still playing with the other band at the time, but it wasn't long into it where he said, look, the work that you're doing there is actually going to take you backwards. I think it's best that you leave. So I left the band and I was just working with Fred. I wasn't playing another band or anything. I was just learning through him to get better. And it was only after a couple of weeks with him, he said, they have competitions. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, they have these competitions. They have different divisions. He said, because you haven't competed before, he said you would compete in what it went learner, elementary, sub-intermediate, intermediate, and then open. And he said you could compete in learner for 1 year. In elementary, you stay in there until you're good enough and the judges say that, yes, you need to go up into sub-intermediate and then intermediate and so on and so forth. And so I thought I was quite excited by this because at that time when I was a kid, it was like I didn't have a lot of self-confidence in me. I was being bullied at the time. I wasn't smart at school. I was kind of struggling, but I really liked this and I was getting really good at it. And so I wanted to win a trophy to prove to myself what I could do and to almost like be something. Because like at school, you would hear the same people were winning at the sports carnivals and they were, you know, holding up the best students in front of the school and everybody else. And, you know, that didn't really feel good to me. It's like, man, how come they're really good students and they're really good at summer sports, they're really good at winter sports, they're really good at team sports. You know, they're really attractive, all that kind of stuff. It's like, man, I don't have any of that. So I wanted to put everything into this. And so I practiced and practiced and practiced. And I entered my very first competition after probably 6 months working with Fred. And I won the competition. And we're sitting there listening for the results to be read out. And they went third, second, and then first. And that when they read out third and then second, and I'm just sitting there thinking, oh, I missed out. And Fred said to me, you played well and so forth. And of course, you have no context because you're competing and warming up and stuff. You don't get to hear everybody. And anyway, and then they said first, and they said my name. And I'm just sitting there. And Fred was super excited. He said, hey, they called your name. You've got to go up and collect your prize. And I went up and collected the trophy. It's a tiny little trophy. And I still have it because it's not because of you know, what the trophy looks like or anything like that. It's what it represents to me. And that was that moment of, wow, I've competed against all these people and I won. And so I then continued to practice hard and I went on to win like a whole bunch of prizes in the learner category and ended up winning the overall, they had an aggregate prize, I suppose, like who had the most points at the end of the year, and I won that. And it was kind of out of three of us that were showing up regularly and being consistent, but I won the most. And so then I went up into elementary and I continued to win. And every year I went up, because it was an annual thing, so I'd go up and then went up to open. And I was winning at every level. Now let's come back a little bit. So while Fred was telling me about we have these competitions and this is what you can do, he'd mentioned that there was one of his previous students was an Australian champion. And he had two students at the time and he thought the other one would have won, but this one did. And he said, but they don't have the Australian championships anymore. They just stopped for whatever reasons in solo competitions. And he was mentioning about the world championships. And so they had world championships, solo playing, and also pipe bands. And I'm like, I want to be the best in Australia. I want to be the best in the world. So I'm going to practice. And look, there came a point, probably a decade or so later, where I realized that, look, I just didn't have that natural talent where I was going to be the best solo piper in the world. Like, my fingers weren't fast enough. They weren't fluid enough, if you like, to be at that standard. But what I wanted to do was compete in the world championships with a pipe band. And so that journey led me to, say, 1990, right? So at this stage, I've won everything, and I had an opportunity where there was an Australian band, the Victoria Police Pipe Band. They were going to compete in, they had different grades, and grade one is the top. And so they were in grade one here in Australia. There was an opportunity where they were going to be the first Australian band to ever compete in grade one in a world championship. And so that was my goal. And I obviously, everybody knew me because of, you know, my reputation and everything in that field. And so we reached out to the band and said, look, this is what I want to do. I could join as an honorary member of the Victoria Police, and I could join the band, and I could, if I was good enough, get to the World Championships with them. And so this just happened to be coinciding because they were based in Melbourne. I was in Bendigo. I got the music, I was practicing the music, etc. But it was also very tightly controlled, right? You didn't share music and everything, because it was like, well, might have been written just for, you know, just for that band and everything. And it just so happened to coincide with the World Championships the year they were going, 1990, was also the year that I was starting with Coopers and Lybrand. So I got the job with Coopers. I then had to write to them and say, look, this, I have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to compete in the World Championships. It's going to be in August. I was starting in February. I'm not going to have enough leave. Can I have leave without pay for, I think it was a 2-week period for the trip and the World Championships? And they said yes. I thought, excellent. Obviously a huge change for me in my life. I was moving from Bendigo. I was sharing with a guy that I went to uni with. We moved into the sort of inner suburbs of, I was living in Hawthorne, so I don't know, about 7 km from the CBD, because I was working right in the heart of the city in a big high-rise building. And I was going to go to the World Championships. I was starting my professional year to become a chartered accountant in the next 12 months. I was learning all these new skills, etc., in work, and it was really, really hectic, very stressful time. And so I'm living in this, like, apartment, and the bagpipes are very loud, and you can practice on what's called a practice chanter, which isn't loud at all, but I also needed to practice on the bagpipes. So we were living next to, it's like a Greek Orthodox church or something like that. I went and spoke to the priest, and I said, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to the World Championships. I need somewhere to practice. Would it be possible for me to practice in the church or somewhere? And he said, well, we've got some rooms underneath the church. You can practice there. And so I said, oh, terrific. So he went and opened it up for me. It was almost straight away. And I went in there, and without a shadow of a doubt, within, I reckon, 5 minutes of me playing, there's a knock on the door. He comes in, and there's somebody standing there with him, which was one of the neighbours. And he said, look, I'm so sorry. They're saying it's too loud. And she was standing behind, just absolutely ranting at me. And it's like, what? What the heck? So he said, look, I'm so sorry, but you won't be able to do it. It's like, man, I was barely going 5 minutes. So I had nowhere to practice. So I could only practice then at the pipe band's hall. Now, I didn't have a car. I only had a push bike, and it was a 45-minute drive from where I was to the band hall. So I had to catch two different trains to get there for band practice, etc. And it was, yeah, like, it was just hectic, right? There was a lot going on for me. So anyway, I get into the band and I'm practicing hard. I'm practicing, you know, like hours a day so that I'm good enough. And we get to that point where the guy that ran the band, he was very, very, very strict. He would shout, he would swear at you, he'd stand like centimeters away from your face and just yell at you and do all of that. And if you made a mistake or whatever, you'd have to go sit down. Like you'd say, no, go sit down. So you'd have to think about it. Now, keep in mind, back when I first started learning, it would take, say, weeks to learn a piece of music and then memorize it and then to go out and be able to play it. What we had to do at this level was we were given a sheet of music, we would play it around with our practice chanters in a room, and within half an hour, we would have to memorize the music, play it perfectly, and then go out onto the floor with the bagpipes and everyone and play it pretty much flawlessly within like half an hour to an hour. Like, it was intense. And if you made mistakes, you were yelled at, you'd have to sit down. So there was a lot of people, because we were going to the World Championships, there was a lot of people that wanted to get into the band, but you had to be a certain standard. And I remember as we got closer to, I don't know how far out we were, it was only a matter of weeks, let's say 4 weeks out. And the guy, by this stage, I had, I was still living in Hawthorne, but the guy that helped me get into the band, he was one of the people that said he didn't get a spot. And there was another guy that came from Bendigo who was the pipe major of this other band who thought he was it in a bit. He didn't get a spot either, but I did. So I was the only extra person outside the normal band that got a spot. And I thought, wow, I felt for the other guys, obviously, because there had been so much build up to this and they were going to come along to support and all that kind of stuff, but they missed out on a spot. So then we go to Scotland. So the World Championships in Glasgow, Scotland. We go over there. My first time traveling overseas. I didn't understand what jet lag was and all that kind of stuff. And it was a real challenge. Climatically, I struggled as well. It was, I don't know whether this is altitude over there. I don't think it is. But I just really struggled for energy when I got there. I didn't know what it was, whether it was the food, whether it was kind of humid, but then it was cold and it was weird. And I really struggled. So I wasn't bringing out my best in terms of my energy. And the food over there was just appalling. Like, I couldn't get my hands on good quality food. In the end, they ended up providing us with, I think, breakfast and maybe one meal, like an evening meal, where they had like real food, if you like. They have a lot of processed food over there. And we were kind of staying out in the middle of nowhere, and the only thing available was really fish and chips and some, I don't know, there was something else, like a deli, which didn't really sell too much apart from cheese and, you know, like ham and those sorts of meats. And it was bizarre. Anyway, so I struggled with that, and we were practicing hours and hours and hours, almost over practicing, I think. And so we get to the day of the World Championships, and it's raining on and off. So we're getting wet, we're covering up, we're uncovering, and all the moisture in the air affects the reeds. At the time we were playing then, the reeds are different now, but the time we were playing then, all the reeds were cane, which, as you can imagine, the more moisture that's in cane, it expands, contracts, etc., which means that the sound that's coming out is different, and so you have to keep tuning, retuning, and so forth. So we had to. What you have to do is you march into your formation, and for the World Championships, you have to play. I think we played twice. And you play like a set of one thing, then a set of another. You finish, you march over to another area, then you play that second set straight up afterwards. And you stand in a circle, everyone's standing in a circle, and you play. And the judges are moving around, kind of sticking their heads down to hear the sound and all that kind of stuff. Like, it can be quite intimidating But of course, you're very focused on what it is that you're doing. So we get to that stage and you have to think, up to this moment, this is my whole life of like over a decade of practicing for this moment. Other people have missed out. This is my chance. We get there and I'll never forget, we were playing, I think it was in the second set of our music, and I made a mistake. And it's like all the practice, all the memorization, all that kind of stuff. And I had a moment and I panicked. I thought, we've only played that through twice. So you play each bracket through twice, and we'd actually already done it twice. And I started to play that same line of music again. It's like, so I don't know, maybe 2-3 notes wrong. You can hear that there was a mistake, and then corrected it and went on. But I felt so stupid. And it's like, man, how could you do that? This is the World Championships. How could you make a mistake right here? And so, you know, I felt bad for that. Nobody could really, like in the band, nobody could really tell that it was me. I later told the pipe major and I said, look, I'm so sorry. I said, look, I made a mistake here. He said, you know, don't worry about it, which was ironic given how aggressive and angry he was. He said, look, we did a good job overall. He said, you did a good job. And I said, it was just him and me. And I said to him, look, I just really want to thank you. I said, I know not everybody got in here, and I know you know what I sacrificed to get here and how important it was for me. And yeah, I just really want to thank you for it. Because sometimes you just don't know. Like at that time, I didn't know that would be really my last competition. We did one more after that, I think. Oh, and maybe there's a couple more after that. But that was in August, and my last competition was in December that year. And I just decided that the fun had gone out of it. And to put this into context, like at the standard we were at, so there were 28 bands that competed in grade one. We came 14th out of 28. We believe that we should have really got in the top 10. But it's also political over there. Anywhere where you've got judges, and it was the first time an Australian band had ever competed at that level. And so it was going to take a few years to get to be known by the judges and stuff. And anyway, I think it was within the next 5 to 10 years, where I wasn't playing, but they went back and they actually won the World Championships. Now they're not allowed to compete. They've had changes in, you know, what the Victoria Police Pipe Band can do. But then you just don't know sometimes that could be your only chance. But to give you an idea of the standard difference, when we won the Australian titles in December that year up in Queensland, The difference between first and second in the World Championships comes down to fractions of points. It could be 0.25, it could be half, something like that. Like the top 10 could be separated by 5 points, right? When we won in Australia, we won by over 100 points. That's just the difference in the standard of the playing compared to where we were. And it was, you know, it was such an amazing feeling to play with such quality music, quality players, and you know, some of the best times of my life, really, in all of that. And so if I think about the movie and what it took for, you know, that young guy to get to that point where, you know, say he kicks the winning goal, to me that was kind of my moment where I didn't know that this possibility existed at some point in my life. And then my first coach, Fred, he was the one that gave me the hunger and showed me the way to be able to get there. But I'd created this focus and work ethic within me, which I continue on today, to be able to enable me to achieve something that I never thought even existed for me. But then I was so laser-light focused for over a decade, and I was just going to do whatever it was. It was so hard for me to do it. It would have been so easy not to do it because I didn't have the car. I couldn't get to practice. There were barriers coming up. The neighbors complaining, the, you know, all of these different things. Other people missed out. I got to get in there. I put in all the work to put me in that place to be able to perform on the world stage. And today I think about a summary of all of that. If it wasn't for my coach, Fred, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I would not have been successful at doing what I was with the bagpipes. I wouldn't have ever competed because I didn't know. The band that I first started with, they never competed because they didn't have anyone in the band that had that skill to be able to even go to that level to teach kids to even compete. They could barely play music themselves, and what they could play was a mess. So it was connecting with the right coach. He lit a fire within me to become very focused and create the work ethic, because I would ask lots of questions like, how much should I practice? And then if he said, well, if you practice like half an hour a day, I would double it. Sometimes I was practicing 2, sometimes 3 hours a day just so I could get better faster. But I was doing what he was saying, but then maybe doing more because I was just so eager to do it. I was then competing, so I'm testing myself against others, which was really important. That's how you get better. You get independent judges that are telling you, giving you instant feedback about what you're doing right, what you aren't doing right, how do you get better. And then Fred got to that stage where he said to me that I've taught you everything that I know. You need to go to another coach now. And I remember that moment. I have spoken about this on a podcast before. I was devastated because I had such a connection. He was like a dad to me. Like an older dad, maybe like a granddad. But he had given me more guidance than my own dad had given me. He drove me. He was also a great friend of mine because I would spend so much time with him. Just in the weekends, I'd just ride my bike over to his place and just spend time with him to hang out in his veggie garden. And he'd teach me about vegetables and how to sharpen saws. He used to do these big circular saws, sharpen those for people. He was into gold prospecting and all that sort of stuff, and all the gold that he'd collected and just different stories and everything. He was in the war. He was like my best friend, really. And because I didn't have other friends, and it was perhaps weird to have an older friend like that, but he was also my coach. And so then I had to travel to Melbourne to get a coach down here. He picked somebody that he thought would be really good for me, or reached out to him. This person said that they would teach me. We'd come down like every fortnight we'd travel like 5 hours for an hour and a half to 2 hour lesson. And then from there, one thing led to the next, to the next, to the next, and it just raised my standard. So all of that formula for success can be applied across any area of life where you want to get better, whether it's your business. I still use those same philosophies now. I've got to have a coach. I have to have an unrelenting work ethic. I've got to have a hunger to want to get better every single day. And that stays with me now. And I guess I created that when I was a little kid. I was always very focused. But that's how you get the results, right? And then I like watching the soccer, and then starting to watch a special about Messi and a documentary about him. And, you know, he's so great because he started when he was a kid. And just that drive, he was just always practicing. He was always driven, always loved soccer to become, you know, the most decorated soccer player on the planet. So, I don't know, I just wanted to share that with you because maybe you get some inspiration out of what's possible for you. And if you think, well, I'm too old to do this now, or oh, I don't do this, or I don't do that, you have to find the things in life that you really love. Like, I was never going to be able to take the bagpipes and then, you know, turn that into a career and make money out of it and do that kind of stuff. That wasn't something that interested me. I went down the chartered accounting path because I saw that as being a way to be financially free, etc. Through, I guess, both of those lots of skills that I developed, I learned that, well, I just had to back myself into whatever it is that I want to do. And now I just absolutely love what I do, and I never work a day in my life because it just gives me so much joy to do what I do. But the principles remain the same. I have a coach. I'm very focused. I practice. I'm unrelenting in what I do every single day, and I will just never ever stop. So until the day I die. So if you want to connect with me, go to mentaltoughnessandbodyshow.com. You can opt in for a free consultation. Sorry, this has been a little bit longer than normal, but hopefully today's story inspires you to bring out the greater version of you. See you tomorrow.